Welcome back to the TV Talk Machine Podcast, episode 132. I'm Jason Snell. Across the internet from me, your host, chief TV critic at The Hollywood Reporter, Mr. Tim Goodman. Hello.
Hey, Jason.
We're back. We went away for, we skipped a week.
We do that
every now and then.
Yeah, rarely.
And you've been running around all day today, but we couldn't let people go without another week without the TV Talk Machine. So we're going to do a quick hit edition.
Yeah, I don't know how they would get through the week without it, actually.
No, they're already on death's door, quite frankly, without us. So this is our big chance to help them out. So really, we're going to move through. I got a bunch of letters. I'm not going to get to them all, I'm sure. But let's get started with before the letter stuff, with the more newsy stuff. We should point people, you interviewed last weekend, which is why you weren't on the podcast last week. Interviewed Ricky Gervais at 92Y Tribeca in New York. And I believe like a couple of days later, they posted the video of that, right? So that's up for people to see.
Yeah, they actually put the the Periscope video right away, and they think they put it live on their Facebook page right away, and now the standard video is up, so it's all good. Yeah, it was they're really good about that. I think there's actually archives there as well, but that was fun.
Yeah, that's great. So I'm glad you had a good time. That sounded great. I'm a big Ricky Gervais fan, so I'm glad. And I'm a big Tim Goodman fan, too. Look at that.
Look at that.
So it was good? It was all good?
It actually worked out really well. He was really pleased with it, and his wife was, or his partner. And people at 92nd Street Y were, and the THR people for the TV Talk series. So everybody was good, and I was happy with it, because you never know how that's going to go, especially with a comic. But he did talk. He talked about a lot of stuff, and we covered a lot of ground. And I thought we got to some really interesting places in the conversation. And I was overall pretty pleased with it, and was happy to be healthy when I got there on Saturday. Like I think I said this the last time when I was doing the Americans. You never know when you book something on, and then it's months in advance, and then all of a sudden you get sick the day before. So, but I was good.
Yeah. I have thrown up in a New York hotel room before.
Oh, no.
On a trip where it's like, hey, I'm in New York. Yeah. Oh, God, I have to just lay down now. It happens.
I had a tooth infection.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like two days before I headed to the interview. I was like, oh, my God, what's happening?
So you could have just been up there with like an ice pack on your face talking to Ricky Gervais.
But I didn't know what was going to happen, whether that infection was going to spread and make me sick. Who knows? But, you know, I was just happy it was all over, and I probably killed it with wine. And that's something I recommend to everybody.
Yeah, I think that's smart. It's a disinfectant.
It is, yeah.
We should mention a show that premiered that you reviewed, Master of None on Netflix. So much television, easy to miss it. I had a whole conversation with my wife, and I'll tell you about what we watched in a little bit. But we sort of finished a bunch of stuff we were watching, and then it's like, what do we watch next? And I clicked on a show, and she actually said, I have literally never heard of that show. And she said she had a conversation the day before about something that somebody was talking about that was on Netflix. And she said, I had literally never heard of that show. And when I mentioned that, she said, what about this show? And I'd also not heard that. And I said, this is why Tim and I do this podcast, is because it's just so easy to get lost. And even if it's a show that you like and you want to know when it's coming back, how do you even know? So that's my long way around of saying Master of None season one was so fantastic, Aziz Ansari's show. And it is back now on Netflix. And you did write a review. It's been back for a couple of weeks now. And it's worth highlighting that, because it's still great. And you likened it to an Italian meal.
Yes, I did.
Manja.
Yeah.
You're looking a little light. Eat up.
I loved it. I watched the entire season and I loved it. It's funny because we talk, this is sort of the reverse about not knowing what's on and being surprised and or excited. One series that is on that I had to review so far in advance is, I think we might even mention this, is the Amazon's I Love Dick.
And, right. I saw that's on my Amazon box, and I'm like, wow, didn't Tim and I talk about that like 3 months ago?
Yeah,
but it was
ages
it was
ago.
One of those film festival things, right?
Yeah, which you never want to see that. I didn't even, you know, when you don't have something good to say, basically, I was like, why am I going to repost this? You know, takedown of a series I was really not, underwhelmed by. So that's back, but I didn't like it. And then a little show called Twin Peaks started when I was gone.
Yeah. I do want to talk about that. But okay. So anyway, I mean, anything to say about Master of None other than the first season was great and you really love the second season, so people should watch them both if they haven't. And
yeah.
And
I would say it continues to be an there are a couple of episodes. What I like about it is there is no rule. It's like Louis. There's no rule book to how they do it. I like that. I like that they're like, here's our narrative that we're following. And then, oops, hey, this week we take a diversion completely. Yeah. And we don't even talk about it. Because I think that that's a little bit like life. Like one of the overarching I mean, I love that they start the season in Italy and they do a couple episodes. I think I could have watched the entire season of him in Italy because he actually speaks Italian pretty well. And when he doesn't, he has such a joy in saying the words. And that's, of course, one of the running jokes in the thing. I could have seen a whole season set there. But there is a story arc about relationships, and they get to that. But, like, you don't always obsess about a relationship or a person that you're trying to see or meet every day of your life. You have other friends who come in and other things that are going on in your life. And I think that the show reflects that. And I like the fact that it's a little herky-jerky here in spots where, like, oh, we're just going to do a flashback episode. So we're just going to do this random thing about New York, people who work in New York. I loved it.
You mentioned Louis, but I was thinking of Atlanta, too, right? Mm-hmm. Where the show was confident enough, even in its first season, confident enough to just say, yeah, this episode's not about any of that stuff. It's this totally out of the blue episode. And you're like, oh, great. Let's go with it. Let's do it.
And some people can't do that, and they don't like shows like that. But yeah, I think you and I, and I think probably the bulk of our listeners are like that.
I actually just had that with American Gods, where I want to say episode 4, I think it's episode 4, basically rewinds back to the first episode and tells you one character's story from a different point of view. Mm-hmm. And I love that. I love that, you know, again, it can be done well, it can be done poorly, but I love the confidence of a show to say, I know what story I'm telling and I can put that on hold and show you this. I'm going to give you as a viewer enough credit to hang with what I'm doing here. And Atlanta totally did that. And I don't know. I mean, you mentioned Louis. Louis is a good example and Master of None is a good example where I get a Woody Allen vibe, not just, I mean, I think, Aziz Ansari is trying, there are very specific Woody Allen references in Master of None that are made like directly stylistically, but backing up behind that, it's just like, if Woody Allen was where he was when he started making a movie a year for the last, like, if you look at his film credits, like the last 30 years, he just makes one movie every single year. Right. Mm-hmm. I feel like if he were that age today, he would make movies, but I think it's even odds that he would just make a streaming series, because I feel like this is like where do you get the budget that you want and the complete control that you want? And I look at these other shows and I have that same thought, which is this is that kind of thing where Aziz Ansari and Alan Yang they know what they want to make, and Louis C.K. knew what he wanted to do with Louis, and Donald Glover knows what he wants to do with Atlanta, and I love it. And that's why those shows are so great, is because they do have this kind of singular vision, and there's somebody behind the scenes who's like, we know exactly what we want to do. It's great.
Yeah, and I think that when Woody Allen finally got a chance to do his show for Amazon,
it's too late.
It was too late. He took the money and ran.
Reference to Woody Allen. Anyway, it was too late. But a modern version, I see that same kind of thing here. Anyway, plus I just love that Aziz Ansari, this young guy, is making these explicit sort of tip of the cap references to sort of like some of the style of Woody Allen, who is an old guy. It's kind of cool. Yeah. I love that. Love that show. Looking forward to that. That's next up for us. I will say, okay, so what else? The show that we started watching that Lauren literally had never heard of and did not know existed was Red Oaks.
Oh, yeah.
Which we started, which is great. And we're both from the 80s. And that I tried to explain to her and I said, it's basically a bunch of 80s movies turned into a show. What if all the 80s movies were a TV show?
Yeah, pretty
much. Like a little Caddyshack and a little Don't Tell Her It's Me. And I mean, it's all bumped in there. And it's, yeah. So we're picking Mozart in the Jungle back up. Mm-hmm. And I've decided to create an Amazon comedy block. And we're just going to watch those and Red Oaks. And we're going to do it that way.
Yeah, yeah, strong. Good choices.
You go. I mean, one of the themes of this podcast is how do you program your entertainment when you can literally do anything, and like trying to find a theme and trying to figure out like an approach to watch good stuff. Anyway, so that's my status report on Red Oaks. joining me. I'm programming that now. We're watching Red Oaks. We should talk about a big thing that didn't happen in the news, which is that project Jon Stewart signed with HBO to do animated shorts for the election, presidential election, that didn't happen. Officially dead now, officially canceled.
Yeah, I think that they were, I think it was a technical issue. I know some people wanted to say, oh, you know, it's a creative thing. It's really not. It's a technical issue. They couldn't deliver the stuff. They were supposed to be delivering stuff during the actual election, and that never, didn't work out. And then after the election was going to happen, winner or loser, he was going to be on the air with this show, and they just kept getting pushed back. And I think they all looked at it and said, you know, the technology's not there, or their ability to deliver it in the way that HBO and Jon Stewart want it done in a specific way and when they can get it is not quite right. So they're moving ahead on other projects for him. But as I tweeted out when I was, I think, flying back from New York, was that, like, you know what? You can do a lot of things. And one of them is to either temporarily or permanently expand John Oliver's show and then have Jon Stewart pop in when he would like. And I think that would serve him well, and people would be happy about it, and it would get a lot of press. And, like, we live in times when things are not just happening every day, as you well know, Jason, they're happening five times a day.
Yeah, I feel like, I mean, part of it is, what does Jon Stewart want to do with his life? What mm-hmm. pace does he want to have now? Because he doesn't need to do anything, basically. So what pace does he want to have? And if he can do little things. I mean, it seems like he's enjoying the dropping into Stephen Colbert every mm-hmm. so often. If he wants to be in business with HBO, I'm sure, you know, would something that goes in John Oliver's show, or right after or right before John Oliver's show, or something like that, that sounds good. Or maybe is there instead of John Oliver's show when his show is not on. Mm-hmm. Something that lets Jon Stewart make some comedy without having the grind that he used to have. But, you know, it's clear that he still is paying attention and wants to do stuff. I think he just doesn't want that serious commitment. So, you know, I hope HBO finds some way to make it work. Because the challenge with Jon Stewart is, he doesn't strike me as one of those guys who's going to go off and spend a year making a project and then come back and release it and then walk away. Because topical stuff is so important to how we think of Jon Stewart. Like, I mean, right now the answer is Colbert. Like, it seems like if Jon Stewart really has a bee in his bonnet about anything, he just goes on Colbert. Like, he calls up mm-hmm. Stephen Colbert and says, I got something for you, and they just bring him on. And that's great. But if somebody could formalize that and say, we will give you that platform, John, whenever you want, even if it's literally HBO says, whenever you've got a video to drop, just drop it and we'll put it on HBO Go. Right. End of story. Yeah. We won't even worry about scheduling it. We'll just put it on HBO Go. It's done. Great.
There's a lot of ways, and you're exactly right about that. There are a lot of ways to get around it. I think that it would be easy to overanalyze the issues that would stand in the way of something like that happening. And my take, and I might do a column on this at some point, maybe even soon, is that the easy way to fix that is that you're at the perfect place for it, and you have a perfect host in John Oliver, who has a good friendship with Jon Stewart, and you have a very understanding fan base that's smart, and you could just say, hey, look, guys, the other thing didn't work out. We are planning some other stuff, but, like, right now, oh my God, Trump is doing, you know, 10 things a day, and to keep track of it, we're going to expand it in this way, and it might be temporarily, we don't know, but hey, enjoy it while we've got it up, and, like, don't overthink it. That's the key. And I think there's enough, John Oliver's ego wouldn't be put out. He wouldn't be threatened. Bill Maher wouldn't be threatened. HBO wouldn't have to say, okay, now what does this mean? I think they just put it on and don't overthink it.
Yeah, it's funny. We have a related letter here, because I think some of that has happened occasionally. Mm-hmm. And Jono, formerly of the Plus 44, now in the 415, wrote in and said, he pointed out that Netflix is flexible over episode length in their originals. And he was asking sort of, is that good or not? And should they be more flexible about the number of episodes? The Defenders actually is going to be eight. Like, so anyway, his question was sort of about, with streaming especially, like, a lot of the chains are off in terms of length and in terms of episodes. And I was thinking about that in terms of John Oliver, because like last week's John Oliver episode was 40 minutes long.
Right.
And they said, we're going to do something different. Or was it 2 weeks ago was 40 minutes long? And then last week they broke the format entirely.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it's a topical show. Things happen. Some weeks are really big weeks. And the way it's scheduled, even on linear HBO, is it's after whatever their big show is. And there's nothing particularly important on after it. It's replays of other things. So I would hope that they would just let them go to whatever length they want. I mean, just do it. Just let them go. And if you do have a special correspondent drop in from Jon Stewart or something like that, sure, we'll find 15 more minutes. I mean, I think they would probably be happy to have that material.
Yeah, and that's the thing. I mean, look, day one of John Oliver's show, I've just said, I love this. It's not long enough.
Yeah.
You know, and then both he and Samantha Bee joked about their own shows not being on enough. It was their choice at the beginning.
Yeah.
But now I think that they're both decisions that could or should be revisited. But there's more flexibility on the HBO schedule than there is on the TNT schedule. Or TBS yeah. schedule, sorry.
I mean, I get the idea that doing a half-hour comedy show with a lot of scripting is very hard, and that if they want to do... I mean, The Daily Show does four. John Oliver and Samantha Bee do one, or maybe you could argue one and a half because of the commercials. But because they, you know, they don't have the commercials that are on The Daily Show. But you could also... If it's good business for HBO to be in, you could increase the budget and get more material out of them if it's that good business for them to be in. And I know that would be more work for everybody, but you could hire more writers and, you know, you could do more. We do seem to be in pretty... I was saying this about the election, but it's really true right now, too, is these are really interesting, fast-paced times, and I really want... I want my go-to... You know, news as satire, satire as news. Like, and The Daily Show provides that to a certain degree. Although, one of the challenges, and Colbert is facing this too, is they pre-tape, mm-hmm. and then things happen. And like at some point, you know, you've got to say to these guys, you just have to go. You have to do it live, like Colbert. You got to do this one live because there's too much going on.
Yeah.
But you know, I want more because this is a time when your once a week format doesn't necessarily fit.
Yeah. I totally agree. That's changes.
We want afoot. More.
More.
Okay, so we should talk about Twin Peaks.
Yes.
So it's back. We talked about this. You wrote the column about weirdness in Legion versus weirdness in Twin Peaks. Have you seen any of the Twin Peaks stuff?
I have not.
All right.
So I'm going to leave it to you.
Let me give you my Twin Peaks report. So
yeah.
if we think back to Jason in past episodes, I was really trepidatious about Twin Peaks coming back because I watched the original show. I loved the original show. Mm-hmm. I went to a diner in San Diego when I was in college a couple of Saturday nights to watch the second season of Twin Peaks with a bunch of fans. I have a Twin Peaks coffee mug that a friend got me. I bought these secret tapes of Agent Cooper audiobook. Like, I was a fan. I loved
yeah,
that show.
That's
and then
fun,
I,
yeah.
And then I watched Fire Walk With Me and I thought, what the hell did you do, David Lynch? And then there was silence for 25 years. So it's back. And like The X-Files coming back, another show I dearly loved. I was like, oh man, like, don't ruin my nice, unbroken memory of this thing I enjoyed in the past. My mm-hmm. nostalgia, hazy, wonderful memory. And The X-Files, like, those episodes weren't very good. And that's totally, like, I still haven't, there's still two I haven't watched because it's just like, I can't even bear it because they were so bad. So here's my story. In 4 days, I watched all four streaming episodes of Twin Peaks and I'm ready for more.
Wow.
It's weird. I'm not sure if it's good. It's parts of it are very good. Parts of it are super strange, and I can't decide if it's stylistically strange or if it's actually just kind of bad and the style is trying to hide it. But I think David Lynch, I kind of got to give it to him. Like, this is the kind of stuff he wants to do. I think some of it is really artificial, but some of it's really naturalistic. Like, David Lynch likes having people who basically aren't actors and they're right. not acting like actors. And I can't decide whether that makes them seem like amateurs or whether it makes them seem like real people.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the thing. That's a David Lynch thing. That's what he does. But I will say, having not studied the lore from 25 years ago. Just started watching. I didn't rewatch the series or anything. Just started watching. There was some like, oh yeah, right, I forgot all about that kind of stuff. But I watched every hour of it. I watched all 4 hours of it over the course of 3 or 4 days. And there was always something there to put me along. Sometimes it was laughing at the deliberate, like I said about the watching the pilot again a few weeks ago, the deliberate nature of the show, that there are moments in Twin Peaks, old and new, where David Lynch, he's just there to frustrate you. He's just, yeah, he's trolling the audience, where he's like, there's a very long scene where a delivery truck drives up, the guy gets out, goes around to the other side, takes some boxes off the truck, slowly walks around back to the other way, to walks into a little area where a guy is standing, hands him the boxes. The guy says, thank you. We watch the guy go back to the truck. Truck drives away. And you're like, what is this? What did you just show me? But it's but there's also some very weird stuff. And the third episode, I have to say, is arguably, I mean, in the Legion versus Twin Peaks question.
Yeah.
I saw somebody, and I want to say it was Seppenwall, but I'm not quite sure, but there was somebody, some TV critic, who literally just said, it's as if David Lynch pulled up a chair and said, Legion, I love you. Let me show you how weird on TV is really done.
Interesting.
And it's super weird. And yeah, so I don't know. It's not for everybody. In fact, it's not for most people. But I can say I'm kind of liking it and watching it. And that's really all I can ask for, is it is Twin Peaks thoroughly, through and through, for better and for worse. And for some people, it will really work for them. And for other people, they, like my wife was like, I think we watched the first 10 or 15 minutes, and she said, you can watch this on your own. I'm not interested.
Oh, wow. Interesting.
Not, yeah, just not. She had never seen the original show, and she's just like, forget it. Life's too short. I don't want to see it. And
weird.
I was like, I am fascinated by this, and I want to see more. So that's the that's my Twin Peaks report. We have some letter writers who have Twin Peaks reports for us too.
Yeah, because I'm gonna circle around and I will get to it, and I'll have my feedback at some point. But
yeah,
I'm so far behind on so many other shows. It's like a real person.
It's a very I get it. It's super weird, but it's not. I'm not disappointed by it. I feel like it does exactly what it said on the box, and it fulfilled all of my expectations of my memory of the original show, and that's all I can really ask for. I'm not sure it actually, if you lined it up with the original show, it's the same show at all. In fact, it seems like David Lynch is way more interested in his storyline that he's concocted for this than he is in the old characters back in Twin Peaks proper.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Like, they're more like cameos. Mm-hmm. In another story that he's telling. And I'm sure that people who are like super fans who just want to know more about the coffee at the diner and the cherry pie, like there's no coffee or diner or cherry pie in the first 4 episodes. So I'm sure those people are unhappy, but yeah. I didn't care. I was fascinated by it. So Rob in the 612 wrote in and said, hi guys, Twin Peaks. My reaction in 1999 was, what the? Followed by, whoa, this is cool. My reaction in 2017 so far is, what the? Followed by, whoa, this is cool. All of us being men of a certain age, familiar with the original run, I'm interested in hearing your reactions to the new season. Well, there you go, Rob.
Yeah.
I'm with you. That's basically what I said. There is a moment there. I'm going to check the box here. Everybody get ready. I'm checking the box.
Oh, goodness. You never
Rob also
this.
Didn't say what the. He said what the fuck. That's what he said. But I was going to not check the box. But now I'm going to check the box because I'm going to tell you my story, which is I got about 15 minutes into the first episode of Twin Peaks. And there's a scene, or maybe 30 minutes in. And there's a scene that ends. And I could not control myself. I literally just exclaimed to no one in the room, holy shit. You know, there's something to be said for TV that makes you exclaim things that you cannot just like, you cannot believe what you just saw. It's great.
Wow.
So again, I'm not saying it's good or for anyone, but it definitely got a reaction and made me want to see more. Micah in the 415 area code of record.
Yep.
I'm completely agreed on your takes on the original Twin Peaks and the chances we'll get something of merit out of Twin Peaks: The Return. Yet I still signed up for Showtime to watch this and even revisited Firewalk with Me. Mm-hmm. Twin Peaks: The Return is great. Who knew? With the original, you could feel the seams of its conception everywhere. Melodrama cranked up too high, abuse of a musical score to maintain a rhythm and stitch non-essential scene to non-essential scene, a network striving to make a show conform to expectations, etc. This 2017 take doesn't even feel like a television show. Freed from expectations, these episodes seem to roam free freely, forcing the viewer to parse what they're watching and the many things it could mean. It evokes Blue Velvet and Mulholland Drive more so than the original Twin Peaks. I'd also argue these first four episodes are stronger than anything in the original, save for possibly the pilot. Hmm. Interesting take.
That's boldly out in front.
Well, what I would say to Micah is that the original show, when it settled in, one of the things it was doing was kind of parodying a nighttime soap. And that is the thing that's aged the least well about it, mm-hmm. because that was the post Dallas and Dynasty era. And it was like, that was a more sort of trenchant format to critique. And David Lynch is not interested in dealing with that in 2017. It's not relevant. It's to his interests or our interests. So I think that's one of the ways that it's really changed from the original. Yeah. And yeah, it's 2017 David Lynch. He's scratching the itches that, you know, that matter to him. That's why it's different. But yeah, I agree. One more.
Sure.
One more. No, actually two more.
Okay.
Two more. Lots of Twin Peaks letters. I got to say, you really, with that Legion talk.
Yeah. It is the topic that people want to get to. And it's so funny. It's like, my trip to New York kind of delayed my ability to jump right into Twin Peaks. I mean, they did it when I was gone, so
yeah.
I couldn't do it. But
I don't recommend watching this on a plane either. I'll just say it. There's a scene there's a scene that involves both nudity and enormous buckets of blood. So, you know.
Right.
Not quite the blood that's in American Gods, but
okay.
So here this one's from Hobo Eric's doppelganger. Calling from the -44, because of course there are evil doppelgangers in Twin Peaks. He says, I assume you've already gone into length about Twin Peaks. Well done, Hobo Eric's doppelganger. I also assume that Tim has retracted his Legion Twin Peaks article. Not true, because he hasn't seen it yet. My question is, after the pacing, sheer terror, mundane scenes, throwaway plots, can anyone really review this show part by part? Lynch doesn't seem to have been kidding when he said he made an 18-hour-long movie. You can comment on style and individual scenes, but to really grasp the plot or lack of, we're just going to have to wait until September. I know this isn't how we like to think of TV series being compiled, but here we are. Now go and locate Tim's doppelganger. Or is Tim's doppelganger really on this podcast now? Plot twist. I mean, I don't know. I don't know. I think you got to review what you can review, because you want to get... I don't think there's going to be something in the last 10 hours of this show that are going to be like a dramatic divergence from the style of the first four. You can't... Maybe it'll be a letdown, but you know, that's true. You could literally review no shows if you had to watch all the episodes. You can't do that.
Yeah.
So
it's I think that it's a lot to ask in this. I mean, I saw all the talk about that, it being 18 parts, not episodes.
It's still got cliffhangers and stuff in it. I mean, it's glacially paced. At one point, it's so glacially paced that I shouted out, slow TV.
It's return. Like,
it's slow TV. The original slow TV is back. But it's still episodes, and you know, you can't wait till the end, because nobody has the time, and they aren't showing all 18 hours or whatever it is. So this is where we're left.
Yeah. And I think that, I think that asking people to watch 18 episodes before they offer up an opinion or like, you know, come to a verdict is a bit much. I think it's totally legitimate to check in not only at the first two and then the four, but also, I mean, you're super excited now. I would just say that, you know, you've got 14 more to go.
There's a lot. Yeah. There's plenty of chance for it to lose me.
Yeah, totally. It could lose momentum. It could lose direction. It could, all the things you like about it could become annoying. There's a lot of things that could happen. So, yeah.
Yeah. No, and I think that's, not to get all philosophical here for a second, but I think one of the fun things about talking about television as an art form, I'm curious what you think about this, but my feeling is one of the fun things about it is that it's an art form that unfolds. It's serial storytelling. Novels, we don't talk about novels between chapters. That doesn't happen. We don't talk about movies between act one and act two. We don't have a conversation about it, right? They're singular objects of art, and then you judge them. But television doesn't, I mean, if it's a series, it doesn't work that way. And that's kind of part of the fun of it. But it also means that, no, it's impossible to render a historic judgment about the entire work, because you got to talk about it after you've seen 1 or 4 or 6 hours of it. That's just how it is.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, yeah, that's how, well, look, you can't wait. I mean, that's not how somebody tweeted out to me, like, why don't you just wait? Why do we have to, like, wait? I was like, well, really?
We're all in this together. It's service journalism, too. I mean, one of the reasons is because you're telling people whether they should jump on board now or not. And wait, your verdict is going to be a lot less useful in 4 months.
Yeah, and to that person, I was too obvious. I couldn't respond. Was it one of those I just can't moments?
History will be the judge, you know.
Yeah, right. Exactly.
In the end, history will be the judge. But we're all in this together. We're all enjoying the ride together. And critics will get a little bit of a peek ahead to let us know what they're seeing up ahead by getting extra episodes screened. But beyond that, none of us really know. And that's just how it is. That's television.
Yeah, exactly.
One more Twin Peaks letter. This is Brandon from the 301. This is an interesting related question. I noticed Showtime released the first 4 hours of Twin Peaks, despite only airing the first two last Sunday. I had no self-control and watched all four on Sunday night. Is this going to become a thing in cable, putting the first few episodes on demand right away to build hype? Has it already become a thing that I have missed? Are we moving toward all networks doing the Netflix thing and releasing all at once or in big chunks? And how would that change how TV is made? What did you think about that strategy that they aired 2 hours, but they posted 4 hours on demand and on their app?
Well, they technically they didn't do the other posting of the other two until the first two had aired. So you could, once you watch the first two, then all four were available.
Right, right. But, I mean, but still, the next 2 weeks, the episodes that will appear on Showtime, I believe, will have been ones I've already seen, right? Because I watched them this week on the app.
Yeah. And that, I think, is fine. It's Showtime allowing people to binge and get a little bit of that. That's a different technique. They didn't do the, I thought it was a joke that they allowed David Lynch to sort of, well, I mean, I guess they said he could do whatever he wants, but he, you know, keeping a lid on it. And then, you know, and as Dan Feinberg wrote for THR when he did the review, it's like, how do I review this? It's not enough here.
Yeah.
It doesn't make any sense. It's if it is really 18 parts, these two are so discombobulated, I can't render an opinion. And so his review was basically him talking about how he couldn't write the review. Some other people loved it and other people hated it. It was not conducive for an actual critical take. And I think that was on purpose. They were obviously trying to go for maximum tune in and maximum appeal. And they got that.
Totally.
To their credit, I would say, because I'm often critical of Showtime. To their credit, they were like, okay, this was, I mean, sure, it was, that's how he wanted it. But to their credit, they said, okay, now the other two are available too. So if you have to do this review, and a lot of people had to have them up and done that night, but everybody else was like, okay, here you get a perspective of having all four, and that should help. I don't know if they're going to do that going forward, because I haven't been paying too much attention to their strategy on this one, because it's a show that I feel like, I mean, I think I will push up my interest level in watching it after having done this podcast and hearing what you said and others, listeners have said. But generally I was like, yeah, okay, great. I'm glad some people like it, some people hate it. I'm going to watch it in due time. There's so many other shows I want to watch, but I'll push that up. I do not know what their strategy is. Don't know if they're going to keep putting that on demand.
But it's an interesting idea, especially at the beginning, to sort of get the binge feel and get you really into it. The problem is, what now, right? Is the rest of this model that from now on I will wait 2 weeks where I won't watch any, and then after that I will watch 1 hour every week like everybody else, or are they going to do it in batches? I don't know. I think networks are experimenting with this stuff. I did hear the ratings weren't particularly good for on the linear channel, which is not too surprising. The ratings, I mean, it's a weird niche show. It's not that surprising. But Showtime did report that they got a lot of uptake for their mobile and little TV box app version of Showtime. And yeah, I downloaded the Showtime app. And that's, you know, they put the four episodes on there. They got a lot of us who've never downloaded the Showtime Anytime app to download it. And so in that way, maybe it's a kind of a victory, right? Because they've got a bunch of app installs on devices now that they didn't have before.
Oh, and look, make no mistake about it. That strategy, as much as I hated how it worked for the press, that strategy worked out great on their business side, because that's what you want to do. They're a subscription-driven business. The ratings do not matter.
Right.
And also, you know, if anybody from Showtime is listening, I'm sure they're not anymore, but if they were.
No, they're loving this because I said nice things about it. They're loving it.
And I've said nice things. But listen, I did not tweet out. There were some negative tweets about the ratings. And I didn't tweet those out because overnight ratings, it's useless. That doesn't make it, in fact, it's almost it's a journalistic disservice to do overnight ratings in this day and age, because it's basically a lie. And it's not telling the whole truth. And people who do that are knowingly doing that, knowing that, like, oh yeah, you know, in 3 days this is going to spike, and in cable, and based on this type of show, it could go up 50% or 75% in 2 weeks.
Yeah,
so
you could,
the numbers,
in fact,
can be there.
You could argue that the 4 episodes on streaming, one of the effects it has is to tell people who are digitally savvy, don't worry. There's 4 hours here whenever you want to watch it over the next 4 weeks.
Yeah.
And you'll be ahead of the game. And that because it doesn't matter to them, right? It doesn't matter. It matters that I installed their app. It matters that I watched some stuff eventually. And maybe I'll realize, oh, look, the Showtime app has this and this and this. And that's all part of their game to keep me in their universe. So, yeah, I think it's using a cult show to get a lot of people to sample your product and put your app on their phone. And it's
smart.
Like, do it. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Good.
Smart.
I think very smart. All right. We're tight and bright and we should go. How about that?
Let's do that. Yeah.
All right. So tweet at us at TVTM, or tweet at me at Jay Snell, tweet at Tim at Bastard Machine, podcast@TVTalkMachine.com for your emails, facebook.com/TVTalkMachine for your Facebook posts. And we'll be back next week with more of your letters. I've saved the other letters I gathered.
Yes, bigger and longer.
To 133, but this will be the end for 132. Tim, have a good Memorial Day weekend, and we'll talk next week.
All right, Jason, we'll see you then.